Coming up, Robert Patrick joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Number is it two?
And two. Now,
it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV show.
Hi, it's Ileana Douglas. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Tamara Berg. How are you?
Hi, everybody. It's a little crazy here. I think we're
feeling giggly and girly.
We are.
Today.
We've been off for a little while.
I guess that's it.
And that's part of it. Like, mm-hmm. The adrenaline's really high. When I was leaving the house this morning, I was like, I don't even know if I have everything. We've been off for so long. Do I have the right bag? Do I have the right info? What am I doing?
She came in with all of her snacks. All of her homemade potato chips.
Yes.
All I contributed was peanut butter.
Which is always delicious and is a crowd pleaser.
You know, it's so funny because you're friends with someone, but you have to acknowledge, like, Robert Patrick, he's really got, like, star power.
Yeah.
Right? Like, when he came in.
Do you mean, like, he shines a little bit? Yes, totally.
Everybody came in and you kind of get to attention. And
he's even wearing a hat and glasses when he walked in. Sunglasses when he walked in, which is, you know, the disguise. But there's no denying who he is.
I thought he looked like a Connecticut State Trooper.
Yes.
But he told me it was an LBJ hat.
Stetson.
Yes. But I've known Robert for many years. We did a film together, and we've attended church together. He's just just an amazing actor and great person, and great guy, and varied interests, and always the hardest working manager.
He's a bazillion credits.
Yeah, he's always working, and he's always good. And I've never talked to him about craft, so that's going to be kind of interesting. We mentioned that this is live, and I mentioned before the doing a little fundraiser on my Facebook.
Yes.
For Chimp Haven, which is a sanctuary in Louisiana. Did you see the film Jane? I love chimpanzees anyway. And
yes, I believe I did.
It's really beautiful. And Chimp Haven, I mean, I learned about it because I was shooting a movie in Louisiana. And I thought it was a joke, like, that there was this sanctuary for chimps that had been in show business. And I sort of thought it was funny. And then I read about it, and I didn't realize that when they use chimpanzees in show business, they use baby chimpanzees. So once they use them for that, it's really sad. They usually, after that, just get sold to get experimented on or... None of it's very pretty or good. And this is a place in Louisiana where they can try to live somewhat of a natural existence. I've been there. It's an incredible place. And, once you see a chimpanzee close up, it's so beautiful. And I don't know. I just really relate to them. And I'm thrilled that we're doing so well on this little fundraiser.
Yeah, you're almost to... You only just started it yesterday, right?
Yes.
And you're almost to your goal?
Yeah, we're about halfway there. So
that's amazing. And I haven't contributed yet, so...
Yeah, Tamara.
Oh, Ileana gets sassy over the break.
I know, I love it. Okay, and then the other thing I want to mention is Ingmar Bergman's 100th birthday. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Ingmar Bergman fan. I never saw Bergman films in my cinematic, like, growing up. I grew up with, like, Woody Allen and Love and Death. So or Monty Python. I was watching people that were making fun of Ingmar Bergman, but I didn't understand the source.
Right.
And so... as I wrote about in my book, when I started doing the show for IKEA and the Swedish show, I thought, I'm going to start watching Ingmar Bergman. So I went back to the very beginning of his films, which are films that he wrote. And then his breakthrough film is called Smiles of a Summer Night. And then his next film after that is Wild Strawberries. And then it's The Seventh Seal. And that's the famous, playing Death, playing Game of Chess and all that. Obviously, he's made probably 50 more films. But if anyone thinks he's inaccessible, I'd say start with Smiles of a Summer Night because it's like a crazy sex comedy, but that also has some sadness in it. Wild Strawberries is one of my favorite films. And then if you go on from there, they start to get more depth. Virgin Spring is like, don't make any plans if you after you watch that. And then what I find really interesting about, I watched all of his films from the beginning, but that's sort of how I am. Right. I'm like, okay, I'm going to dive deep.
You historian, you. Yes.
I don't know. I just sort of, I started
well,
from the very
beginning.
I think
you like
beginning.
To have context. So exactly. It really helps you like sort of order things in your brilliant brain.
Right. And then so you see, and then you get into the 60s and he does this movie like Persona that is so crazy and out there and Cries and Whispers, another one that's like, what is happening? This is so out there. So I worry for people that if you're going to start with Bergman and you start with Cries and Whispers, you're going to go, no, I can't. What is right. happening? The one woman is nursing the other woman. What is happening? It's right. too weird and out there. And same thing with Persona. They maybe they're not accessible. So start with the accessible ones. Everyone must see, I think, The Seventh Seal. Like, you have to see it. It's a beautiful film, actually. In addition, you just have to accept that it does take place in feudal times. Mm-hmm. So it's about this knight, and he's in the... But once you get over that, everything else in the movie is very accessible. There's a group of actors, and it's very, very poignant and very interesting. And so, in terms of celebrating his 100th birthday, how it helped me was that he does so many things like where he goes in and out of reality. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that you were able to do that. And that's always the way I think. Like, if I'm talking to someone, I have a sidebar conversation, maybe. That's off going off somewhere else, or I start daydreaming, or I start... But I didn't know that when you were, as a writer, that you could actually write about things like that. And so when I started watching Bergman and hearing him talk about things like that, it sort of opened me up to be able to mix humor and tragedy and really just talk about the, you know, the human condition. And I just, you know, aside from his beautiful camera angles and things like that, it's just been a fun summer to rediscover watching all of his things. So I highly recommend that.
Awesome. Let's bring in Robert, shall
we? Let's bring in Robert. I don't know if Robert's a Bergman fan, but Robert is perhaps best known for his role originally in Terminator 2. How could we forget that? He was on The X-Files. I remember that. He was an amazing performance. I'm sure everybody remembers when he was on The Sopranos. He was on the television show Scorpion, Dusk Till Dawn, The Unit, and then his movies, The Faculty, Charlie's Angels. I don't see Hacks here. Safe House.
See Hacks.
I just saw him in an incredible performance, Rampage, these current movies. The Poison Rose and The Rising Hawk. Please welcome my good friend Robert Patrick. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Eliana. How are you?
You look amazing.
You're so sweet.
So good to see you.
You look fantastic. Beautiful as always.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
And I'm so glad you invited me here to be with you, and I finally get to see you again. We used to see each other all the time.
Yes, I know, at church. I mentioned at the top, we used to go to St. Thomas. You still go to St. Thomas, beautiful church.
Beautiful old Gothic church right there on Hollywood Boulevard. Father Ian Davis.
Very funny.
Father Stewart.
Yeah, Father Stewart. And and then our good friend Father Cooper, who's now moved to another church in Encino, St. Nicholas.
And I've been there.
Yeah, and that's a great church.
It's a great church as well. A lot of good churches in this area right now, Episcopalian churches. So.
Yes.
Anglo-Catholic.
Anglo-Catholic. Now, I was raised a Catholic. I was raised
Episcopalian, which is, I believe it's like the first denomination in the United States of America, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe some of the first, earliest churches were Episcopalian.
Uh-huh. I you probably know more about it than me. I was like dyed-in-the-wool
Catholic.
But no. I appreciated the Anglo-Catholicism of St. Thomas, mm-hmm. Because it has some of the same things, but then, they call it, Catholicism Light, I think. Yeah, it's
that's the name for it. That's what the Catholics call it.
I think they don't include the Immaculate Conception. There's a couple little tricky things.
It's been explained to me. I can't explain it to you right now, but there's some slight differences. I think what it is primarily is we don't have the Pope.
Yes.
The liturgy is the same, because I've actually snuck into some Catholic churches on location and acted like I was Catholic. I don't know if I go, I'm in trouble.
Have you ever played a priest in a film?
I want to.
Yeah.
Casting directors out there right now, I would love to play a...
You'd play a great priest.
I've spotted the camera now.
As an actor.
I'm just going to start playing to that. I'm sorry.
Have you found your light?
Not yet. Kind of worried about that. But anyway...
Found your light.
I'm finding it, hopefully. I've got all these procedures on my face. But enough about me. Let's talk about you.
No. We're going to go back to you. Now, you were born in Georgia.
Marietta, Georgia.
Marietta, Georgia. Is that near Atlanta?
It's right outside of Atlanta. A little bit, I think it's, let's say, north.
My grandfather, Melvin Douglas, was born in Macon.
Very famous actor.
Yes. So
was born in Macon, Georgia?
He was born in Macon, Georgia, yeah.
Do they have like his birthplace house there and all that?
They don't have the house. They have a film festival for him.
They do have a film festival?
It is a rather... I did. I went to it, and it's a great city. A lot of mansions and things like that. Atlanta feels very new, like very new buildings.
Yeah, Atlanta's very new, and it's got all sorts of... It's kind of hard to, the skyline is not that, it's not that beautiful. It's sort of the way it's laid out. Like, I was doing a movie down there with Bobby Duvall, name dropping, but, and Bobby was like, it's an ugly city. It's not the prettiest city.
Food.
But we love Atlanta.
Good food.
Barbecue's great.
Great food.
Sam's Barbecue, US 41, South Roswell, Georgia, South Roswell Road. Right in Marietta, Sam's Barbecue number one, the best barbecue in the country.
Well, let's stop the show.
Stop right there. There go. Best brisket everywhere.
Now, let me ask you, when you're on location, I'm a huge, one of my favorite things to be on location is I usually plan to stay a few more days after the fact and explore where I am. So, like, if I shot a movie in Nebraska, I went to Iowa. I go to Missouri.
You left Nebraska and went to Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't even discover Nebraska. You just went to Iowa. I like that.
Do you bring your motorcycle to location ever? Do you explore the...
Well, yes, I do. And I have sometimes ridden to movie locations on my motorcycle and done my bit and split on my bike. I was literally doing that a couple of weeks ago. I was on my way to our nationals for our motorcycle club in Colorado Springs, and I was going to be riding all the way to Savannah. I was doing a movie with Mr. Travolta and Morgan Freeman with Poison Rose in Savannah, but I had to go there, do that, and then I was going to have to ride back to L.A., get a plane, then fly to Kiev to do a movie there. And somewhere in there, my logic and practical, part of me kicked in and went like, this is crazy, because I'd be on the motorcycle for 6 days, and I need that 6 days to prep this film in Kiev.
Right.
Because I'm doing a mid-Atlantic accent. So I got to abort the mission. So I went to Nationals in Colorado, came back, and then flew to Savannah, did that movie, and then flew home and prepped and then split. So, yeah, it's fun. I like bopping around to different parts of the country on my free time.
Yeah.
And I love experiencing the locations wherever we are. I mean, that's a great thing about our business, I think. I mean, I don't know about you. I'd never had a passport until became an actor, and all of a sudden I needed a passport. So, I need a passport. Wow. Where am I going? The Philippines. Oh, cool.
Oh, no, I love it. Like getting to work in Sweden
Hey, did you get to work in Sweden when you were doing the IKEA thing?
Well, that's how it came about, because I did the show, and then the very last year, and we're going to get to that because you were very funny on the show. But
it was a great story. You can be funny.
That was
I want you to be on my show. You can be funny. I know you can be funny.
You are.
But you are a funny guy.
You are funny.
And everybody doesn't think about you being funny, but you're funny.
That was my pitch.
At church. And I went, okay.
Perfect.
I'll do that.
And I had, because we were in church, I was like, I got him. I can't go back on your word. No, I did. When we did the show, I had a Swedish agent because we needed people to speak Swedish in the show. Mm-hmm. And of course, typical actor thing, I said, hey, if anything ever comes up in Sweden, I'll be ready. And sure enough, they'd call me and they said, you know, we have this television show with Greg Poehler, who's Amy Poehler's brother, who mm-hmm. about him moving to Sweden, he met a Swedish girl and fell in love, and they wanted me to play his mother. And even though I was about 5 years old,
how much aging was involved?
Well, you know, who played the husband? It was Patrick Duffy, who is on Dallas.
Oh wow!
Yeah, okay. I was like, I'm in. I mean, I'm an actor. I'm like, sure. We'll make
it work.
I'm in. Yeah. I'm in. Yeah. Sweden, Patrick Duffy. I'm in. Like, it's already fun, yeah. You know? I feel like I do, I'm skipping around my questions, but I feel like I do, you seem to take things very, like, you read the script and you look for things. I'm like, I'm in. That sounds fun. Patrick Duffy, Sweden.
That was enough for me.
You're thoughtful.
Maybe. I'm considerate of it, but... But I'm also, you know, as I was saying to you out there, I mean, I work because, A, I love it, but also because I'm the sole provider of three, adult people.
Uh-huh.
And I take care of my mother now. So I have to have income. And I find myself, you know, in a position where things are being offered and I can kind of pick what I want to do, and mm-hmm. I'm very fortunate that way. I'm very blessed that way. And even before, when I would like, when I was auditioning all the time, I would go, well, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's kind of that mentality. But if something comes to me and I just go like, because I get offered, you know, I'll get offered some stuff that I just find morally, I don't even want to know if I can go there as an actor. And I'll say no to that, you know. But I don't know. Maybe I say yeah a lot more than I think I do. But
no, it doesn't seem, I feel like
I've been lucky that I get really good stuff.
You certainly do, my goodness.
Been lucky.
Okay, so going back to the beginning, do you remember the first movie you saw and who took you to see it?
You're going to love this. You brought up Marietta, Georgia.
Yes.
Okay, so I was born there in 1958. I'm 59 years old. At some point, my father took me to see The Boy 10 Feet Tall. I think my mother was there, too. The Boy 10 Feet Tall with Edward G. Robinson.
Okay.
And there was a little boy, and I think he was about 9 or 10 in the movie, and it was in the Middle East, and his parents are British, and there's some war bombing thing, and he's orphaned and left to roam the Middle East, and he meets all these people, and it's a story of a little boy with a lot of courage, and Edward G. Robinson is in it, and it was amazing. And my dad took me to the Fox Theater in Atlanta, which is historic.
Yes.
Yeah, you've been there, I'm sure.
I have.
It's still there.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And you go in, and it's all this Moorish architecture and the stars and everything. And you go in the theater, and it's almost like a planetarium in a way.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was just like the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. Because my father's a very sophisticated, very well-educated man, and my mother is graduated high school from Marietta High in Georgia, and they met at Lockheed Aircraft. So I've got these two different kind of sensibilities that I was raised in. And my father loved going to the movies, and James Bond. But that particular one was the first one, and it's funny, Ileana, because I remember looking at it going like, I want to do that. How did that little boy get up there? Not like, I mean, I knew it was a film, but I mean, how did he get to do that?
Right.
I was fascinated by that. Because it seemed like what I was doing every day anyway, because we would, you know, put the six shooters on, run around. We were cowboys and Indians and army and all that kind of stuff. And it seemed like what he was doing. So that was the first movie experience that I totally remember.
And were there actors that you looked at? I always talk about, for me, it was Richard Dreyfuss. I was a huge fan. Oh, wow. Did you have people that you looked at and admired? And you mentioned James Bond, but...
Yeah, I think, well, I, of course, being in the South, they always show Gone with the Wind. So at some point I saw Gone with the Wind, and I was pretty horrified by that, especially when that soldier gets his leg amputated.
Oh, my God.
With no
anesthetic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And he...
They moved the camera away. I love the old days.
That's some stuff like that. You see that, it makes such an impression. It's like, you mention Gone with the Wind, and I immediately think about that.
Right? Yeah.
But I, growing up where I grew up, the Civil War was fought all around us.
Right.
So Kennesaw Mountain and we used to, this is back in the day, we used to close the door and you were gone and your parents didn't worry about you and you run around the woods and you're dealing with, you know, cottonmouth rattlesnakes and water moccasins and they knew half the stuff that we were up to, right? And your parents never saw you. So anyway, Gone with the Wind, I saw that. I remember that. I love that movie. So Clark Gable, that was your question.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Sean Connery because of James Bond. And then...
did you get into people, you know, when I started going to drive-ins, then I started get... In terms of actors, I think the first actor I thought was amazing was probably Al Pacino. Probably. Oh, yeah. Like, for me, seeing Dog Day Afternoon with my grandmother, I was just like, whoa, this is...
Yeah. Were you acting actively then? When did you start acting?
I started acting... doing musicals when I was about 15.
So in high school musicals and stuff like
that? No. Like dinner theater youth theater. Yeah, I was rejected in school.
Really?
Yeah. I was like part of the nerdy. Everything I did was outside, you know, was like dinner, getting, you know, chorus parts and
dinner theater. You didn't grow up in Los Angeles.
No, I grew up in, it was in Connecticut, and then I went almost immediately to New York. And I went to acting school. Went to the Neighborhood Playhouse.
Oh, wow.
And then was in New York, and then traveled and worked. And I didn't move to L.A. until 1998.
Is that right?
Yeah. Wow. That's right when we did the... You know, when we did the film. But those are the people, like, I liked Al Pacino, I liked Jane Fonda quite a bit.
Yeah.
Those are always my favorite.
Because there's, you know, you're talking about when you're a child and you're looking at that. I was an athlete, so my heroes weren't necessarily in the theater. I didn't know I was going to be an actor. I knew I liked what that little boy was doing up on the screen, and I wanted to, you know, play and pretend like that.
Yeah.
But I was too busy playing baseball and football and thinking that's where my life was going to be. So athletes were my thing, like Hank Aaron. And we had the Atlanta Braves in 1966, and the Falcons came on, so Tommy Nobis, you know. So I was a jock.
Uh-huh.
And unlike you...
Yes.
I wasn't a nerd, so I was a jock. So what's the alternative? I kind of got roped into my first production.
Mm-hmm.
Was in third grade. I was asked by a teacher to be Peter Pan in the school play.
Yeah.
In third grade. So now I've got
a big part.
It's a big part. It's my first part. I'm Peter Pan. Come on. And I said, well, yeah, I'll do it for sure. And I remember something like there was going to be some tights I had to wear. And I said, nah, I don't want to do that. I'll wear like green corduroy. Because I realized I had to, like, these are my buds out here going to be seeing me. I was a little leery of some stuff about it. And this is third grade. I'm a kid. But I remember my first running out on stage. And I think they gave me the role for my athleticism. I don't know. I like to think that. But I jump up as high as I can and just boom. Hi, I'm Peter Pan and I'm from Never Never Land. You know, that's how it started.
Oh, my God.
I loved it. And I was really hooked. And I don't know how many productions we did.
Yeah.
But I loved the whole experience of rehearsing and immersing yourself in that. And then I never did it again. You know, I mean, it was like we moved, we left Atlanta, went to Dayton, Ohio, and it was a whole new set of circumstances. And I kind of went astray. I kind of got a little bad, but stayed busy with athletics. And then we moved again after that when I went to high school, and I was still a little bit of a rough dude and was still focused mostly on athletics. So I didn't I think I participated in a talent show or something when I was in high school. But
what was your talent? Acting or?
I think we did something stupid. We seen on the Gong Show where, oh God, I don't know if I can stand it, where they on the Gong Show they had this thing where da da na na na, and the guys were all standing there, and they had their zippers, and they went da 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 da, zip 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 zip, and that was like our talent, and that was the only thing I did in high school. Anyway,
that's some talent.
I saved you that. That was I pantomime.
Yes.
Yeah. Ladies here.
For those of you on the radio, listening on the iTunes. Yeah, so what got you to, I mean, I guess where this is all leading to is like, how the heck then, your first movie.
Yeah, how about
that? I mean, most of us, our first movie is like one line. I mean, my first line, you know, is New York Stories. Like, I think I had like five lines or something, supporting part. But you got like a huge studio movie in Die Hard.
Yeah,
working with a movie star.
Well, I had a very small part in that, and I'll tell you that real. I'm gonna give you a very brief story. I'm gonna try to be as brief as I can. I told the story earlier today. I had a tough time transitioning from high school to college. I basically was there to play football. I had broken up with my high school sweetheart. I went there to play football. I didn't have the heart, knew I didn't have the heart, so I quit football. Then I just basically wasted a year of college that my dad paid for. And I was very, I didn't realize that. I was very depressed, very lost, had no direction. And then my family had moved to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anybody there. And I left my high school and I left the college in disgrace. My dad was embarrassed. But somewhere in there, I was like, you know, I still had a lot of faith. And I spent a lot of time just praying, trying to figure out, like, what is it that I'm supposed to do? I thought I was supposed to play football. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't get it. I was living in my family's basement. They didn't have a bedroom for me. They were like, my dad was like, what happened to this guy that looked like he was, you know, the golden boy? What's he doing? He's crashing and burning on me. And somewhere in there, I realized I wanted to be an actor. And then I was afraid to tell anybody because, you know, when you tell somebody what you want to do, they usually talk you out of it by telling you all the things that they can't do, and they put it on you, and then they tell you why you can't do it, and you're crazy to try it. And then I realized, all right, I don't want to tell anybody what I'm doing. But I was involved in a boating accident in Cleveland, Lake Erie, and the boat sank. I swam for 3.5 hours. I saved 4 or 5 people. But here's the deal. Thank God my parents had, you know, taken me to church when I was a kid. And as I said, I went to Episcopal school. I had this really, really strong faith. And I remember swimming the whole way. And I remember saying, I get it. I'm kind of wasting away. I'm not pursuing the very things that you've laid out for me that I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. I hear you. And I'll commit to pursuing this dream that I think I have, as ridiculous as it sounds, right? Go to Hollywood and become an actor, right? And I got home, we saved one of my brother, and I saved all these other people, and I came to my father and I said, I'm moving to California. And he said, what the hell are you doing? I've been bartending, waiting tables, working in factories, you know, digging ditches, doing all this kind of stuff. And I said, I'm going to be an actor, Dad. And he went like, you don't know anything about being an actor. What makes you think you'd be an actor? I don't know, Dad. It's hard to explain, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to leave. And I left. And I moved to Hollywood, and I lived in my car, and I didn't know anybody. And I got a job waiting tables, and somebody saw me, and they said, hey, man, you got a cool look. You auditioned for this play. I did. I got the play. And then somebody saw me, and I started doing movies for Roger Corman. in this play, and I had like one or two lines, and I did a bunch of movies for Roger Corman. I didn't know who Roger Corman was. He was king of the B movies. Martin Scorsese started there. Francis Ford Coppola started there. Bobby De Niro started there. All these people started there. And here I am starting there, and now they're throwing this stuff at me. I auditioned for this part. And I get it. I find out I'm doing my own stunts. I'm fine with that. Next thing you know, I don't have an agent. We're sending you to the Philippines. Cool. I don't have a passport. Get a passport, go to the Philippines. It's one movie after another. These guys, and it, I think it was because I was just like, you know, yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that jump. I'll do that fall. But I was learning how to act.
Right.
Which leads me to Die Hard. And I got an agent. I got my SAG card. And it was like the first job that Daryl Marsek was my agent that he sent me in on was Die Hard 2. And I read for Rennie Harlan and Jackie Birch, who I just saw recently. Mm-hmm. And they cast me on the spot.
Wow.
I was like, I'd never been on the 20th Century lot. I mean, I'm walking around like going like, wow. Jeez. You know, there's Rhett Butler, and this really made, wow, you know. And I went back to my car, and I just sat there bawling. I mean, I was just like, couldn't believe it. And I made that movie, and I left out something. I met my wife in 1984 when I first got to Hollywood, and she was my girlfriend, and I got the engagement ring when I did that movie. Mm-hmm. With the, I made all this money. It was Joel Silver. He used to give all these actors. I took that money and I bought her an engagement ring. I asked her to marry me. I did another play. Uh-huh. And while I was doing that play, I got T2. And that's my story.
So,
and I have a little bit of training, right? Like, I mean, I love it. You say, I would love to be able to say I trained at the Playhouse and I did this, or I went to Carnegie Mellon, but I didn't. I'm that guy that sort of forced his way in somehow. There was somebody left the door open just enough for me to get in, Roger Corman. Mm-hmm. And so I've had to kind of like learn as I go and get better and better and better at it. But
but when, man,
when I think that story now, Ileana,
it's
just
amazing.
Go like, I don't even know if it is amazing, but it is my story. But it's like, it's totally based on my faith, mm-hmm. and not my faith in myself, but my faith in God, that I was going to be able to do this, that I would be able to accomplish this journey.
Well, what were some of the things that you were working on? So I can imagine, you know, I remember my first movie was like, the idea that you're being filmed, and then each time the camera got closer,
oh, yeah.
is
yeah.
when you sort of freak out a bit.
Yeah.
And that takes a while to kind of learn. What were the things that you were...
Well,
like one is... I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No,
like, you realize... probably the 101 is, oh, it's a long shot. I don't have to cry.
They're
a mile away.
They're a mile away.
So what were some of the things that you had to work on?
Well, when I got in there, I realized that I was very charged up and very everything and every word was, you know, my first close-up. Like, when I didn't even realize what a close-up was. My first close-up, my wife's working.
Yeah,
she was in a theater when they saw it. She said it was actually a kind of an ooh moment. That's what she said. But I see it, it's like, I'm going to do it for you. I can't cheat, Turk. And I'm like, what the hell kind of delivery is that? Who am I? What it was terrible, but it was enough to like propel it. But
right,
it's taken me. Let me just say this: it's taken me my entire career to learn from the people that were willing to teach me. Mm-hmm. Great directors that I've worked with over the years. Dial it back, buddy.
Yeah,
you're enough.
Mm-hmm.
All the great things that we do know as actors, that I'm a human being, I'm entitled to be in front of this camera,
right.
I literally don't have to do anything, I just have to think it, and we just do it, and we do it enough to where it becomes so second nature to us. But early on, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I mean,
right.
you know, find your mark. And all right, yeah, great. And I would just look around and see what everybody else is doing. No one else knew what the hell they were doing either, right? You know, stunts. I just thought, well, shit. I'll just swing at you as close as I can and see what happens, man.
Well, you had in the when you did Terminator, didn't you? You accidentally hit Arnold.
I hit Arnold.
I mean, isn't that the worst fear of, like...
Yeah, I hit Arnold.
They're going to remove you from Hollywood?
Well, you know, going back real quick, and I didn't mean to, like... I feel like I sort of commandeered this interview, and I apologize for that, but
no,
I just wanted to kind of give you a sense of...
love it.
Of, you know, where I kind of came from. I think that might be interesting for the people.
Yeah.
Your viewers and listeners. And but I got T2. I literally drove by the place where I auditioned on the way here.
Oh.
Which was weird.
Wow, that is weird.
It's literally a brick building right over here on Burbank Boulevard or Lancashire Boulevard, right before you get to Burbank. And it's on the left hand side. It'll be on your right when you're going home if you go that way. And I remember
I love that.
That whole process. And I remember what Cameron responded to was I was unique looking. And I had figured out a way. I for some reason I was so spot on with what he was looking for. He didn't even know what he was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Was what I was bringing him. You know what I mean? And
I can see it completely. To me, you have a corn-fed Americana look, but the eyes betray that, and the eyes look kind of like psycho and crazy.
Psycho. I'm a little crazy.
That's what I think is like, wait a minute, is he a corn-fed Iowa boy, or is he
a crazy,
is he
psychotic
a film
dude?
Noir killer, you know?
Well, at the time, I was a real lean, lean, lean dude. I'm a lot bigger than I was then. And
yeah.
You know, once I had kind of thought about pursuing this, you know, one of the guys that I really started, you know, looking at and kind of going like, you know, was James Dean. I admittedly that was kind of one of the things that early on people were interested in. They thought that was kind of, and that's the way it is in this business. They see you and go, you know, it reminds me a little bit of
when we did Hacks. I have a photograph of you and me and Stephen Ray, and you look exactly like James Dean. You had those horn rim glasses.
We did Hacks.
Yes, I know. You keep trying to block it out, but no.
I love you. I love her. We did do Hacks. It's
we had a lot of laughs.
I filled in for
movie.
Billy Bob.
You did?
Yeah, Billy Bob was supposed to play that role.
Oh,
and I just saw him Saturday night.
Funny.
He was singing at
that.
The Mint. And I'm trying to get him to do this movie that I'm about to do. I love Billy. I've worked with him twice. He's a great guy. His story is fantastic.
Yeah.
He's wonderful. He was supposed to do it, and he dropped out. And Jason Clark produced that, right?
Yes.
And Jason Clark's now Seth MacFarlane's guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Producer.
Jason's doing...
He's doing fantastic.
Lots of movies.
He gave me anyway, I'm all over the place. But Jason was... No, I'm not all over the place. Jason was my first AD on my first film.
He was. So you've known him that long. So he must have called you in a
Which
pinch.
Was Warlords from Hell.
Love that.
Which is the Roger Corman thing that I did at Indian Dunes with the,
So when you were doing, we're going to get to Hacks.
Where were we? Did I jump from a question you asked me?
You got the part in Terminator.
Yes, ma'am.
And so tell me some of the, was it green? Did they do green screen in those days or was it?
Maybe a very small amount, but I don't really remember it. And I don't know if it was involved. I'm going to say this. This is Steve Spaz Williams is a dear friend of mine that created the liquid metal
effect.
So
effect
iconic.
For Abyss.
You're
and
in
then
every.
It became
iconic.
The liquid metal thing for. But, you know, Steve Spaz Williams, who was at ILM, he said, you realize you invented motion capture. And I go, really? And he goes, you were the first motion capture actor. And I'm like, really? And he went, you are? And I was like, I guess I am.
Well, I know you're on every
I have no
Chuck
I had no
Workman
idea.
Oscar. Do you know who Chuck Workman is? That when they when they did, I can't remember what year they did it, but it was like, you know, 100 years of cinema or whatever. Chuck Workman used to put together little shorts for the Academy Awards. Yeah, they don't really do them anymore. They used to be awesome. But I always remember when you made that. To me, that's like, there's no greater honor than being from the history of cinema.
It blows my mind.
They always include you.
I know. I'm so...
It's great.
I'm so grateful for that. You know, Ileana, I got to tell you, I I've been all over the place with that character. Because on the one hand, it's the thing that everybody sees wherever I go. It's like my thing.
Mm.
And it's given me such a wonderful life. And I'm so grateful to have that movie under my belt. But there was a real time where it was like, God, you know, is that all they ever see? I mean, is that it? Why is it? And I would go like, is it because I was an unknown nobody and that's their first impression of me? So automatically that's who I am forever. Are they ever going to give me a shot to do some other stuff? And it was frustrating at sometimes. But, you know, now we're, you know, since I've done that movie, I've done, you know, over 100 movies. So, right. I mean, it did work to my advantage. And I figured out a way to make peace with it. Mm-hmm. And now I love the guy.
Yeah.
I'm in love with that character again because I realize I owe everything to that character. But boy, you know, there's some really, tough years where I was like, God, you know, I'm admitting to you now. I don't think I've admitted to this to anybody. I don't know how I feel about that. I'm very frustrated that that's all that people see.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get them to quit seeing me that way?
Yeah. Well, now they do, but I mean,
yeah, but boy.
But there was this weird thing about cinema is there's a nostalgia about how we felt
when we first saw
this thing, and they just want you to recreate it for them, I guess.
I don't want to just make this think about
you were
me.
Too good.
But you know, I still have guys come up to me. I was just doing a movie with Tommy Flanagan, and I love Tommy. He's a great guy. He's great. I remember him from Braveheart. You know Tommy Flanagan. He's on Sons of Anarchy.
Yep.
We're doing a movie again. But he goes, this is Tommy. I've known him for years, and he goes, brother, I got to do a Scottish accent. I still remember the first day that I saw you in the theater. Yeah, bloody hell, you're running, you know. And I'm going like, wow, that's his first impression of me too. it's hard to conceive that I'm on that Academy clip thing because I'm still that kid that was at the Fox Theater watching the boy 10 feet tall, and I want to do that someday, kind of a thing. It's weird how life
I think it's great.
Life is great.
Okay, so Hacks, we met on this comedy. It was my mom's favorite movie. I always have to plug. She loves
Remember
Hacks.
I had the goatee? I was Mr. Goatee.
You look just like James Dean.
With a goatee.
Yeah, and it was sort of a black comedy. Now, do you have any first impressions of meeting me? I feel like I was maybe more low-key. I was playing a femme fatale.
Yeah, but you were, you know, you called yourself like the, earlier in this talk we're having, you said you were like the outsider, you were like this nerdy kind of gal.
Mm-hmm.
But when I met you, you were so inside the girl, the independent film girl, the studio girl, the girl. I mean, she was... The girl. I mean, you were like the cool chick.
That's me. Still me.
And you are that. And that's but that has a lot to do with who you are. You're just a great person, and I remember that. I remember being slightly intimidated by you.
Really, we had laughs.
We did have some laughs. I remember being.
I remember you.
I remember being a little intimidated. Look, really? When you admit to somebody, I don't have the education you do.
Right.
It kind of already puts you at odds with people where, you know, like, she's this and this and this, and I'm just this guy. You know, I think that's where I was, is what I'm saying.
I had a great experience on that movie. I love the movies and show business, and I just love the whole shebang. I love being on set. That was one of these crazy movies where we didn't have trailers, and so we all stayed in the house. We all had, like, curtained off rooms.
You had a bigger part than I did.
Yeah, well.
You were like one of the main people. I was like just the guy they brought in for a day for a cameo. Let's be honest.
All right. I will.
It's the truth.
But I still enjoyed you being there. But I remember that Ryan O'Neill worked on the film, too. He had like a little cameo.
I remember him.
And
there were some great people. It was like, I want to say.
Tom Arnold.
Eric Sonstreet? No, he wasn't on that. That was a different movie.
Dave Foley, John Ritter.
No, I met John Ritter for the first time on that film.
He was a special.
What a sweet guy.
Special person.
Yeah. Have you worked with him before? He was just a guy.
I hadn't worked with any of these people before. But, you know, like again.
Richard Pine?
Yes.
He was on that. Arnold was on that.
Yes, Tom. Tom was the, Tom has been on the show.
He's done this?
Yes.
Is this his microphone?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Tom is, between Tom and Kevin Pollak, I've worked with them probably, we've done like four or five films together. But I mainly was, you know, like I was on the set, but I mainly just wanted to talk to Ryan O'Neill about Barry Lyndon.
Love story.
Love story, things like that, you know.
Farrah Fawcett.
I
had her poster.
You did? You had the Farrah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on.
I think I had a Serpico poster. There's something wrong with me. Let's face it.
But look at the people that you admire. They're all classes. The great. I mean, Al Pacino?
Yes.
Come on. Have you ever seen a performance like Godfather since that performance? I mean, he's so good in that movie.
I even like Bobby Deerfield, and that was off.
Yeah, that's true.
That was his Martha Keller years.
Godfather, I mean, he was so...
He's Al Pacino. I mean, he's
amazing.
Iconic, again.
Yeah. Yeah.
People who...
Barbara and I got invited to go see him at, what was it, Salome?
Salome, yes.
Were you
yes.
there? Did you see it over
not.
UCLA?
I was not. But I know they did it in New York. There was like a... I worked with...
I think Jessica Chastain was doing it with him.
Oh, really?
If I remember correctly, this is how many years ago this was, and I saw it at the Ebell Theater. Mm-hmm. Is that it? The Ebell Theater over there?
Love
in UCLA,
the Ebell.
By the...
Wilshire.
No, this is further west. This is over there by the National Museum. It's literally by the...
I know what you mean.
The cemetery thing over there.
I know what you mean. Sort of Hancock Park-ish. I know what you...
No, it's not that one. It's the one that's out off the 405 near the National...
Then I'm wrong.
Veterans Cemetery, Memorial. I don't know what to call it. No disrespect to anybody.
But you saw him in that theater.
Yes, no, ma'am. It's not the Regency.
We'll get it right. But you saw him in that.
Who was that?
Our engineer.
That was the voice of God. Okay. I want to get to Copland.
How long have I been talking?
I don't know.
We got about 15 minutes left.
On my way here, I went like, I'm just going to sit here.
And not say anything with
me?
No,
I'm just going to.
That would never happen. Okay. Let's talk about Copland. A movie I should have been in. I auditioned for. I did not make it in the film. I was really, really disappointed. I would have loved to have been in that film. Anyway, I did not get the part, but you were in it. You get to work with these. I mean, Harvey Keitel, Sylvester Stallone, De Niro. Were you at all intimidated by Mr. De Niro, as I wrote about? You know, he's not a big talker.
Totally.
I tend to be really chatty, like, hey, we're doing a movie here. Hey, whoa.
Yeah, and I'm quiet, not easily intimidated, I think is where I'm at. So you want the whole skinny on that? How much of the story do you want?
Well, I want to know...
How I got it?
I want to know how you got it.
You want to know how I got it?
Yes.
Like,
and then you work with James Mangold
again. I didn't
again.
Even get to audition.
Okay. Damn it.
No, wait, this is, you're going to love this story. I didn't even get to audition.
Okay.
They didn't want to see me for that movie. And I am in New York doing press when my wife was with me for Striptease,
mm-hmm.
which is a movie I did with Demi Moore, whom I love dearly. I played her husband. Divorced. And Peter Berg, my friend, name dropping.
Yes.
Me name dropping. Peter Berg and I did Fire in the Sky together. So Peter's in New York getting ready to do Copland. And he invites me to have drinks at the Oak Room at the Plaza, right there on the corner there. And so we go after a day of press, and lo and behold, he's got Meryl Poster with him,
mm-hmm.
Harvey Weinstein's top exec.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all having, and this is back when I was still drinking, and we're having a good time. And maybe I wasn't drinking. But somebody was drinking. We're there anyway. And she says, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm doing press for Striptease. Da, da, da. And I had a goatee. And she says, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, I'm doing press for Striptease. She said, would you read a script tonight? And I went, sure. What is it? It's Copland. Now, I mean, when she said that, I went like, I didn't say any of this, you know. Yeah. It's one of those things. Sure, I'll read it. Yeah, I got some time, so I read it, and I love it. And you know, Barbara and I were all the way home going, "Can you believe you're gonna get to read?" So I agreed to do a cold reading. Well, that's another part of it. So I go to meet James Mangold, Carrie Woods, whom my wife used to date, by the way, and before me, and. Kathy Conrad and a few other people, and James says, "Will you read for me?" And I went, "Absolutely." And it was cold, but he told me after he gave me the role that the reason he gave me the role was that I was willing to cold read, which is interesting. I don't know what people were doing before me, but I've always been. And I don't know where you are on this, but like my acting coach, and I do have an acting coach that I've had for 20 years, but you know, early on he told me, he said, if you get a chance, you want to read for anybody, anywhere, anytime, you should.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you do. I mean, why wouldn't you want to act? I mean, you get an opportunity to do it. That's how you should look at an audition or anything like that. So you should actually audition the director you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
See how he's going to do it, because you're going to show him how you're going to do it. So anyway, but I said yes, and I did it, and I got that role, and you know, I immediately panicked because I'm not from New York, and I've been hiding my Southern roots my entire career, and really trying to avoid anything that denotes corn fed.
I said it.
She said it.
She did.
And so I flew in early, and I did a ride along with the New York City Police Department. And I learned how to talk listening to them. And they were like, and I was just absorbing their thing. And then I met a very kind man who is still one of my best friends, Arthur Nascarella, whom I don't know if you've worked with him yet.
Mm-mm.
He's on Billions. He's fantastic. He's a Vietnam vet, ex-New York City police officer. He was on The Sopranos. But Arthur and I met there. And we started rehearsing with Stallone. And I had let everybody know, I had let him know that I was like really conscious of, if I don't sound authentic, and I'm like, I was working really, really hard at it. But Arthur like kind of took me under his wing, and he would help me with my dialogue. And the first day I saw De Niro, this is where it's leading. Here he is, and I mean, he's De Niro. He's like, he's the guy.
Yeah.
And he walks in, and Harvey's there, and they're looking around, and they're like two, I don't want to say pit bulls, but two bulls or two boxers, adversarial, trying to figure out who's going to get the jump on who in the scene is more or less what they were trying to do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Neither one wanted to acquiesce to the other and wanted to relinquish any power or stage or anything like that. That's basically what they were doing. And we blocked this scene for 3 hours, and you know, Stallone's coming in looking at me going like, what's up? And I'm like, I don't know. These guys, they won't agree to blocking. They won't agree. And it went on and went on. We couldn't shoot the scene. We had to come back the next day to shoot the scene. It's me, Arthur, Sly, Harvey, and De Niro, Bobby De Niro. And I just remember being in the scene, Ileana, and it was my first day, and he says, I have one thing to say. Yeah, hey. That's it. I got this covered. They're going to do all this talking. And all I go, yeah, what's some attitude? Like, yeah, fuck you, right?
Yeah.
Can you say that?
No, but it's okay.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I say, yeah, hey. And he started throwing some ad-libs at me.
So yeah.
He started improvising with me.
Right.
And I was, oh, God. And I was trying to go with it. And, you know, I thought I did an okay job. I think he kind of tested me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen him since I'd auditioned with him before.
Mm-hmm.
I had auditioned for, right after T2, I had auditioned for a movie Mad Dog that he did.
Oh, Mad Dog and Glory.
And David Caruso got the role. And I have to say that I was god-awful in the audition with De Niro in Chicago. And I was kind of hoping he wasn't.
Remembering?
Yeah.
Well, I think I wrote a whole chapter about that. I think that, you know, when you work with people like that, they're probably really thinking about themselves and their lives and what they're going to have for lunch. But mainly you think they're thinking, when can I fire them?
And this book right here.
That book.
Which right you have there. Read from.
This okay. book, which I have read from, will change your lives.
We right are, here. We're skipping so much.
Well, you know
you're
going
to come back. I want to talk about Gangster Squad.
I know. Whatever you want to talk about. I could talk to you for hours.
I want to talk about Gangster Squad because, again, you're working in a large ensemble.
I auditioned for that. That's the last thing I've auditioned for in my career.
Really?
Yeah, I auditioned for that. Originally, I had someone else. I auditioned for that, and I got it.
Which most times, yeah.
You know, sometimes, Ileana.
Again.
You know, you just... No, they were out to who were they out to? They were out to Bryan Cranston, and he couldn't do it. Uh-huh. So I think they started looking for people, and I was one of the first people that read for it, and I ended up getting it, thankfully. That's probably that guy is one of my favorite characters I've ever played in my life, because that's the ideal of what I thought I was going to be when I came out here to Hollywood. I thought I was going to be like a Western guy. I thought I was going to be like a good guy. I thought I was going to be like, maybe I'd get a shot at being a leading man. You know, maybe I could, you know, why not?
So you're never going to be the dad on a sitcom. Hi, honey, I'm home.
I actually want to do that really bad.
I know.
That's the next stage of my career for anybody, and I hope all of Hollywood watches this show.
they
want to do, what do you call that, a three-camera?
Yeah, a three-camera sitcom.
I'm funny.
She's endorsed that.
I am funny. Ileana knows it. I want to do it. I'm great in front of a live audience, and it's my future. I'm the grumpy old. I could be.
You're the new Stacy Keach. He's doing it.
If I could be so lucky.
No, that's what he's doing.
He did a role that I didn't. He did a role. Well, I shouldn't say that. Never mind. Gangster Squad. Yeah. You know what was interesting about Gangster Squad? Because I love Sean Penn. I've met him socially, but I love him as an actor. I mean, he was a big inspiration to me and early on, whether he knew it or not. And he still is to this day. I have a great deal of respect for him. And to get to work with him and see him.
I could see him really liking you and relating to you.
He does. He likes
He's a cool guy.
Yeah, he's very cool.
I just tried to make him laugh.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit too serious around him, maybe. Maybe he can pick up on the fact that, you know, I think he's cool, and maybe he didn't like that. I don't know. But
He is cool.
He's a very cool dude. He's a very fucking cool dude. I just said that. He can't say that.
He can't help it.
He's a very cool guy. But and I sat right next to him. I want to work with him really,
yeah, I'd
really
love to
bad.
Work with him.
And I did, but I didn't really get to have a scene with him. So I really... Sean, if you're watching this, seriously... Before it's over for me, please give me the opportunity. I could do something with you, bro.
He could be in the sitcom. Did you have any discussions?
And Josh Brolin, I love him. I love Josh. I can't wait to work with him again sometime. And Ryan
another
Gosling
person,
is
another
a guy
person.
I loved. And Michael Pena and Giovanni Ribisi and Anthony Mackie. And I didn't leave anybody out.
Emma Stone.
I did because I didn't have a scene with Emma, but I loved her and I think she's fantastic. But I love that movie and doing that movie, and it was such a great time to be in. You love history, you love movies, you love Hollywood. That was an old school kind of movie.
That's what I mean. I would love to, you know, be a part of that. Now, when you're on the set, are you? I would assume a movie like that is maybe not as much fun. I don't know, because certain movies I've done, and when you work with a lot of stars. Mainly, they just go back to their trailers, and then I'm around with my tray trying to figure out, how do I get in there? How do I get in that trailer, you know, to get some, hey, Ryan, how's it going? Saw you in a movie. Oh, sure, I'll come in.
Yeah.
I'm horrible. I mean, I'm a horrible person.
You can do that with me anytime.
But I like, you know, the whole part of getting in show business is sit around and tell fun stories and take pictures.
Yeah.
And
it's true. You know, a name drop, but I've John Travolta, just working with him, and this second movie I've done with John. I like John a lot. He's a great guy. We're very comfortable working together. We enjoy doing scenes together, and we had a lot of fun. And we were talking about that, how, you know, he misses sort of that old school Hollywood where we like to hang out together and people, and you know, and had that history, and that was one of the greatest parties I've ever been to, was John's birthday when he turned 50. Mm-hmm. It was right after we did Ladder 49, and Sean Penn was there, and Oprah, and it was all of Hollywood were flown down there. Well, you were flown down there, right?
Yes.
You were down there.
Yeah.
I remember you being down there.
Yes.
And were you? No, I can't tell if you're such a good actress. Are you being serious? Did you or did you not? I can't tell. You weren't.
I wasn't there either.
I was not there. No, I was not at John Travolta's 50th
birthday.
But
he likes that kind
But I had
of
you
stuff.
Going.
You had me going.
Love it.
You would love it. He's
I couldn't
a great
continue
guy.
With the thing.
You were so awesome.
I was going to go. Don't you remember we were dancing the Watusi?
The Watusi. Yeah, you know, my thing. I often
look at how funny you are.
But sometimes I get very sincere and very literal. I don't know if that's so attractive. I wish I was a little bit more witty. I think if I was able to witty chisel at my personality a little bit.
Well, it depends on what I see you more in the humor of. I mean, what about a great movie like Treasure of Sierra Madre? Walter Huston.
Yeah.
I mean, what about that? There's great humor.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the great. Yeah. I don't know if you know that movie.
I do. But when I like that movie.
You know, when he finds out he's doing the little jig. And yeah. You know what I mean? So I guess it's the right kind of humor. It doesn't necessarily have to be Noel Coward.
Yeah.
Noel Coward witty.
I still think the best careers, the best jobs are ahead of me right now. I've got this movie I'm about to do that I don't even know if I can talk about because. I shouldn't talk about it just because I don't know how they're going to market this thing and how they're going to do it, but it's my movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like something that's kind of eluded me to certain aspects of my career where it's actually, I'm the dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I honest to God feel like my best stuff's ahead of me still. And mm-hmm. that's why I say like doing a three camera comedy. I can't even talk. But maybe we could do it together.
I would love it.
But what if we could do something together?
I would love it. Anytime you're doing a movie, mention me or I'll mention you. I mention you all the time. I always
do you? And what do people say? Seriously, be honest with me.
People love you.
That guy. You kidding me? Did you see his Peter Pan?
Unfortunately, we got to go. I did see you in The Last Rampage where you played that terrible villain.
You should have seen
I was
what she said to me. This is like she tweeted it to me.
Do tell.
Because I was not there. She went like, you are really bad hombre. I think that's exactly what you said, right?
And yes.
You are a bad hombre. That way, I went like,
I was scared.
I think she likes it. Wasn't that one of the darkest? You know, Ileana, that was
very, very, I don't want to tell.
Best reviewed movies I've ever done in my life.
I mean, it's based on a true story.
And I'm not a good guy. So, that was part of, I think that movie, Bruce Davison should have been featured a little bit more in that movie.
Yeah, he was terrific.
Because I'm so dark.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, Rex Reed gave me, like, I got some of the, I sound like I read reviews, but I just happened to notice it was like one of the best reviewed things I've ever done in my career. No one saw it.
It might be hard to get a sitcom after murdering family and bringing your children into it. But it was an amazing performance. Man. I always think you're
people
so good.
People ask me, why did I do that? I've had some people go like, why would you play such a role? I'm like, I'm an actor. It's not like, you know, I mean, I personally believe evil exists.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you get a chance to sort of present it and say, you know, don't forget humans are capable of this. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. Right?
I think so. I thought you were going to say people why ask you why you did Easy to Assemble. As long as
I love doing Easy to Assemble.
No, you were so funny.
I hope I was funny. I really
tried hard.
I got nervous. And nervous? All these funny people. And you were everybody's so good at being funny, and here I am. And
that was his whole joke. I kept saying, coming up next, Robert Patrick, again, will try to be funny.
See?
No, you were terrific.
I'm actually, you know, after 4 years of doing Scorpion, and the writers did such a great job writing me.
Yeah, you became a comedian.
I found it. I found it.
You found the comedy?
I want to do it again.
The comedy bones?
Your eyes match your dress.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
And on that note.
Look
for Robert in his upcoming projects, Tone Deaf,
yes.
Poison Rose, and The Rising Hawk.
I can't tell you.
And okay. the mystery film. You can follow him on Twitter at RobertPatrickT2 and on Instagram at RIPFighter. Thank you, Robert. And you can buy Ileana's book, Dennis Hopper, on Amazon. It's out in paperback.
You've read from it.
It's a great read. Also,
what he didn't know was that I was nothing to be afraid
Facebook.
Of.
Facebook. Check out the website, IleanasPodcast.com. I am done.
And as we always say, everyone's life is like a movie. Your life is like a movie.
Yes, it is.
I get chills when you told me about the place that you auditioned.
That's neat.
It's beautiful.
See, the great thing about you, you appreciate that.
You kidding?
It's these moments in
it's
time you go like, yeah, it's that. That's
it's,
it.
It sounds cornball, but it's really about enjoying the journey and not putting any limitations on yourself of like, oh, my career was started here and it ended here. Yeah. It's all a journey.
It's all a journey.
I think. With a beginning, a middle, and an end, like a movie. You're at the middle. I'm at the middle. But today's the end of our live podcast. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, is there anything you can't do? You do interviews, movies,
I've never been on
plays,
a soap opera.
Musicals, soap. You want to do a soap opera?
No, I don't. I did.
That's the hardest acting known to man.
I think so. But that's the only thing I've never. I never got cast in a soap. I've done plays. I've done hosting, I've done comedy, I've done drama, sitcom.
Are you still doing the Classic Movie Channel hosting, right?
Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
You'd be great to come on that.
I would love to.
Talk about
anything you want to do. Let me
westerns.
Know. She's been anything. So great to me over the years.
Come to a part always pro. You got to get me a job in your next movie.
I'm going to try to figure out what we can do in this next movie.
You guys need to work together.
I'll figure something out.
Okay. Sure. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
See you next time.
God bless America.
Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.